This is the World Cafe. I'm Raina Duris. Now, on paper, Barry Gibb is a superstar. Oh, sorry, I should say Sir Barry Gibb. The only surviving member of the Bee Gees, he is one of the most successful songwriters of all time. And yes, he has also been knighted. But in person, Barry Gibb is exceedingly humble. He's kind and, as you'll hear today, deeply interested in and excited by making music. Some backstory quickly. Barry was born on the Isle of Man and moved with his family to Australia when he was a boy. That family included his three younger brothers, his Bee Gees bandmates Robin and Morris, as well as his youngest, Andy. Their journey has been explored in a new HBO documentary called The Bee Gees, How Can You Mend a Broken Heart? And now, Barry has released a new album that brings some of the songs he and his brothers wrote together in a whole new way. On Greenfields, the Gibb Brothers Songbook Volume 1, Barry performs songs along with folks like Dolly Parton, Jason Isbell, and Brandi Carlile. Today, Barry Gibb and the producer of Greenfields, Dave Cobb, join me to talk about how this album came together. Dave is in Nashville, and Barry joins us from where he now lives in Miami. To get things rolling, here's a song that was first released on the Bee Gees' 1975 album, Main Course. On this new album, Barry performs it with Miranda Lambert and Jay Buchanan. This is Jive Talkin'.
It's just your jive talkin'. You're telling me.
You just heard Jive Talkin', Barry Gibb singing with Jay Buchanan and Miranda Lambert, a song originally on the Bee Gees' 1975 album Main Course. That version is from Barry's new album, Greenfields, the Gibb Brothers Songbook Volume 1. Today, I am joined by Barry Gibb and the producer of Greenfields, Dave Cobb. And just so everybody knows whose voice is whose, though I don't think it'll be that tricky, I'd like to welcome you individually. So Barry, welcome to the World Cafe.
Thank you. Thank you, love.
And Dave, welcome to the World Cafe.
Thank y'all. Happy to be here.
It's great to have you both on. Now, on the surface, the two of you might seem like an unlikely pairing, so I'd like to get into how this all came together. Barry, I understand that your son, Steven, had something to do with you getting tuned into the Dave Cobb universe through the music of artists he's worked with, like Chris Stapleton and Jason Isbell and Brandi Carlile. Could you tell us how that happened?
Yeah, well, I mean, just outside this room, Stephen came up to me and said, "Hey, Dad, have you heard this?" And it was on his iPhone, and it was Chris Stapleton, and it just blew me away. So I thought, "Wow, that's for me, you know, that's right up my street." And if I'm going to make any more records, that's the guy I want to work with. And I said, "Who is this?" And he said, "Oh, it's a guy called Dave Cobb, you know, and he's probably the biggest producer in the world right now." And I said, "Okay, sounds good to me. Let's find out if he's interested, you know."
Dave, what was it like getting that call? Like, what was your reaction when you heard from Barry and his people?
I am a massive Bee Gees fan, and specifically the early records, top 10 albums for me, and specifically the Bee Gees first. And it's something that I obsessed on for many, many years. I mean, that first record particularly, it's got To Love Somebody on it and Holiday and Turn of the Century and these songs that, to me, I love records that sound like that you can't imagine humans getting together and making them. They sound like they're made from Mars or something.
Well, they weren't really humans.
That was one of those records, seminal records. So getting that call and getting to do some of these early songs was just more than I could ever wish or dream of, you know?
Oh, man. Well, it was an incredible experience, and I thank you for it. And I sincerely hope we get to do it again. And I promise not to be so nervous.
Yeah, I mean, Barry, I also read that Stephen kind of had to convince you that people would want to work with you, which blows my mind because, you know, you're one of the most successful songwriters of all time. Why would you think that?
You're very kind, but Nashville is a different world. It's a different world. And if you're not accepted in Nashville, then you're not accepted. That's all there is to it. Nobody explains it. You're just in or you're out, you know. And at one occasion, I was in Nashville and I met Ricky Skaggs and got a chance to do a track with him. And it was called Soldier's Son. And I was bitten. I just thought, you know, this is where I, this, whether other people think so or not, this is where I belong, you know.
I wonder if we could take a listen to that song, Soldier's Son, right now. We'll throw a clip on so we can hear it.
Okay.
For the poor soldier's son, he has died long before he is born. He has died long before he is born.
So that was a bit of Soldier's Son. I'm speaking with Barry Gibb. That was amazing.
Can I hear it again?
I'm speaking with Barry Gibb and Dave Cobb today on World Cafe. So you have this idea to get into the studio together. You bring in all of these different artists with you.
Yeah.
How did you choose these collaborators? Dave, did you just like go through your Rolodex or how did that work?
Barry had a really good idea who he wanted on what. He'd been thinking about it quite a bit. So He kind of picked the majority of the artists and brought a couple of them to the table. But for the most part, Barry had a kind of a mastermind of what he wanted to do before I got involved.
Well, I thought about what I wanted to do, but I knew it wouldn't go exactly like that. So I guess you've really got to be open-minded about what may take place. The people that really meant something to me in my life was Dolly, Alison Krauss, Dave Rawlings and Gillian Welch. You know, these were all dreams come true for me.
Yeah.
Keith Urban, you know, how do you even get those people to do it? And the fact that they said yes is pretty mind-blowing.
I mean, we're going to hear the song that you did the first day in studio that was originally released as a Bee Gees single in 1968, where you're singing with Dolly Parton. It is called Words. So maybe Dave, first, could you set the scene? What was it like in the studio that first day with Dolly coming in?
Well, it was the very first day of getting together, and I'd met Barry prior just one time, and I'd done some work with Dolly, but she never actually, I'd send a track and she put her vocal on it, it came back, but I've never actually been in the studio. So the very first day, you know, first 10 minutes of a session, there's Barry Gibb and Dolly Parton. Not just Barry Gibb, but Sir Barry Gibb, a knight. And someone who owns a theme park. So I was absolutely petrified. And you know, I'm normally somebody who kind of gets super involved, you know, in the song, and I was scared to open my mouth. So just walking to where I was playing guitar next to these guys, my legs started trembling. So I realized the weight, you know. I have a little daughter, and I remember I took her to my home, Savannah, Georgia, a few years ago. She had an analog camera, and when she ran out of film, she's like, I'm going to take pictures with my brain. And she closed her eyes. She goes, click. Click, and she would take a picture in her brain.
Right.
And that's what I was that day. That's what I was doing, just taking a picture in my brain. I was like, it might not ever be this good ever again. So yeah, terrifying and emotional and powerful and maybe legendary.
Yeah. Well, she is daunting. There's no question about that.
Yeah.
Well, Barry, you wrote Islands in the Stream, which Dolly Parton had a hit with in the early 80s with Kenny Rogers. But had you had the chance to sing with her before?
No. She. It was Kenny's thought. He said, well, I want it to be a duet. He said, maybe I'll ask Dolly. And I think that's what happened. I didn't get the chance to ask Dolly. I think Kenny did that.
And so performing Words with her.
Yeah.
You got to do the singing with her. What was that like?
Well, I mean, it's a thrill. Anyone who gets to sing with Dolly Parton is going to be walking away with their shaky legs.
Okay, well, let's hear how it turned out. Here is Words, Barry Gibb singing with Dolly Parton.
Let's start a brand new story now, my love. Right now, there'll be no other time, and I can show you how, my love. Talk in everlasting words.
From Barry Gibb's new album, Greenfields, there he is singing with Dolly Parton, a new version of the Bee Gees song, Words. I'm talking to Barry Gibb and Greenfields producer Dave Cobb today on World Cafe. Now, Dave, you are immersed in the Americana world, but Barry, you were born on the Isle of Man. You moved to Australia when you were 12. Not exactly places where people might think you'd hear a ton of Americana. First of all, why did your family move to Australia, by the way?
Well, it was called The New Life.
Yeah.
And it was 10 years after World War II. And there were a lot of families like us who really could not carve out a living. Our father couldn't get the work. The whole country was in that state. You know, there were still ration books and things like that. So we got into trouble with the police, and they came to the door. And they said, maybe the best thing for you guys is to emigrate to Australia, because if you don't, you're going to end up in a reform school. You know?
Wow.
Because we were not good. Well, we weren't bad kids. We were just mischievous.
And the police told you you should get out of there?
Well, it was one policeman. He was already outgunned, so,
Nice of them to give you that advice before, arresting you or anything.
Yeah, that was nice, wasn't it? Because he didn't have to do that. You know, he just said, why don't you emigrate? He said, I don't want to arrest your kids. He said, just get out of here.
So, Australia, like I said, Australia is not really known for country music. Where did your interest in that kind of music begin?
Well, it does begin in Australia. And in fact, a lot of music in Australia was classified as rock and roll, but in fact, it was country music. If you range from Roy Orbison, Johnny Cash, I remember Teenage Queen, which was about 1958. So radio was really just kicking in, rock and roll radio, pop radio, whatever you want to call it, And so most of the artists you were hearing in Australia were people like Cole Joy, Johnny O'Keefe, and Billy Thorpe and the Aztecs. They were just great talents and great stars in Australia. So we were influenced by those people. And then it was Cole Joy and his brother Kevin who got us our first record contract. So I owe them a lot.
And then, so was there a bluegrass, did you listen to a bluegrassy kind of thing when you were there? What were you listening to?
Yeah, we did the same thing as you might do in Nashville now, what the Ryman represents. There were television shows like that with bales of hay and wooden walls. And the host was a guy called Reg Lindsay. And he was Australia's biggest country artist. So you know what? You worked where you were sent in those days. You worked wherever they sent you.
Yeah.
And these were the venues. There was no choice. We did hotels, returned soldiers clubs, rugby league clubs, always to a crowd that was really drinking heavy, So we got used to that. If something went flying by, we said, oh, that's all right, Half of the course.
I read that your first gig was at a speedway.
That's good. Well, it wasn't really a gig. We wandered onto the speedway during the day and asked the guy. We'd never been on a microphone. We'd never really publicly appeared anywhere. And we just asked the guy if it was possible to sing a song on the PA system. And he said, come back tomorrow. And he was sweeping the track. So we thought, a manager. That's just a joke. So then we came back and he said, the boss said you can do two or three songs tonight on the PA system. Well, wow, we're going to get to actually sing on a microphone, And so, but as luck would have it, it was on the back of a lorry and up quite high. And it was between the races. So we did about two or three songs and the crowd liked it and they threw money onto the track. And we would run out and pick up the money. So, and hopefully not during the next race.
It's one way to get paid.
Well, it was about 5 shillings. It wasn't, we gave it to mom and dad,
I want to go back even a little bit further. Barry, you are most famous for the music you made with the Bee Gees, which was you and two of your three younger brothers, Robin and Morris. And in this new HBO documentary, The Bee Gees, How Can You Mend a Broken Heart?, we learned that one year for Christmas, the three of you were gifted one acoustic guitar. Was that something that you guys asked for specifically?
That's a slight misconception. There was no single gift, but that's. But I used to make guitars in the cellar, the coal cellar of our house, with taking the bottom of a barrel and nailing it to one of the strips from the barrel, and putting steel strings on it and pretending to play it. So I heard the same story about John Lennon, and I hope it's true because it's something I relate to. It didn't matter whether you could play the guitar or not, you just had to wear one. And I think that rock and roll did that to me.
Now, there is a song on Greenfields that was originally released by the Bee Gees in 1970. You wrote it together with your brothers when you were young in Australia. It is called Butterfly. You have David Rawlings and Gillian Welch with you.
Yeah.
Why were they the right artists for this track?
Well, they always were. I mean, I remember finding out that they were in the restaurant downstairs at the Hermitage, and I just freaked out. I dashed downstairs in my bare feet, ran into the restaurant, and just did what I usually do, and I always regret. I said, I love you guys. Don't you understand, you know? And I think it was his parents that they were having dinner with. And they were lovely. They were just lovely and so humble, where I was a little embarrassed, but I didn't care. I did the same thing with Alison when I first saw her. I said, don't you know I love you? You know, everything you do, your music, your feelings really resonates with me. And I couldn't help it. And I said, you know, I love you. I think you're amazing. And she said, oh, you don't know the half of it. And I still don't know what that means. So,
what an image of you running in, no shoes, like in a restaurant to say that.
Yeah, I could have been arrested.
It's wonderful. You know? Well, let's take a listen to Butterfly.
1966, by the way.
So originally from 1966, now a new version with David Rawlings and Gillian Welch and Barry Gibb. This is Butterfly on World Cafe.
My big tear in red pastures, for I
was Butterfly, Barry Gibb with David Rawlings and Gillian Welch from Barry Gibb's new album, Greenfields. I'm Raina Duris. My guests today are Barry Gibb and Greenfields producer Dave Cobb. Now, Dave, on this album, you are working with a lot of different voices. You have Barry's, you have all of these big guests. When you have so many distinct voices, how do you approach that? Are you more like a documentarian trying to capture all these voices as they are, or are you more like, say, a director trying to get a specific performance out of each person?
I think my talent is ordering lunch. I'm really good at knowing what to stock the bar with and what to have for lunch. You know,
I think it's both. Just what you said, love. Dave is a perfectionist, but at a distance. So you never quite know what he's thinking. And his thing is getting you to get do the final vocal on the same take as the band. And I went through years of just cutting tracks, you know, and then concentrating on the vocal. So he put me on the spot, you know, he threw me under the bus.
It was really amazing. I mean, there's so many tracks on the record that Barry's singing live, you know, he's singing live right there with words with Dolly. He's singing live on the Allison track, the Cheryl track, and everyone that came in. And it's just an amazing thing, because you asked me about, you know, are you directing? And I think sometimes when you have this level of singer and talent, the directing just happens. And you notice when Dolly, for instance, is a great example. When Dolly and Barry get together, they just start naturally singing in harmony. And there really isn't anything to do there except for to make sure everything around them is supporting what they're doing. Because he was able to, you know, I got to watch the genius of Barry Gibb, which is this effortless, God-given talent to just naturally do the right thing. And I think pretty much everyone who walked in the studio as a singer had that God-given talent where they just naturally hit the perfect harmony. They naturally knew where to go. So I think my job was making sure everything else worked around this natural vocal thing, you know?
So you just have your own technique. You have your own way of doing it, and everybody falls into place. And I did that for many years, and I was delighted to hand it to you for this album. I did not want to be the boss, you know? You can get so much creativity out if you're not trying to tell everybody else what to do.
You know, Barry, I wanted to talk to you about something, because watching the Bee Gees documentary the other night, there was a scene that, like, I couldn't believe when you got some fateful vocal direction when you were recording the song Nights on Broadway. Arif Martin asked you to do something. It kind of changed everything. What did he ask you to do?
Well, he asked if any one of us could scream in falsetto. And I think he was referring to the Beatles, and I think he was referring to some parts of Nights on Broadway that would really benefit from someone screaming. You know, nobody did that kind of thing, but I remembered that I'd done a song called Please Read Me on Bee Gees First. And I did a lot of falsettos on that record. It was the only song I ever did falsettos on. And then, obviously, 1975, he asked me to do this, and I thought, wow, I haven't done that in years, you know? I'll go out and try, and that's what happened. So, yeah, that day, there's no question. The day I met my wife and the day I discovered the falsetto were life-changing days. It can all happen in one day. That's what's amazing.
I'm going to play just a little clip of Nights on Broadway just so people can hear what we were just talking about. So this is Nights on Broadway. From 1975, that was a bit of Bee Gees' Nights on Broadway. It is World Cafe, and I'm talking to Barry Gibb and Dave Cobb. What was the reaction in the studio when you did that? Like, what was it? What did everybody else do?
I don't know. I don't remember, except that they were all freaking out.
Yeah.
And from there on, I was sort of trapped in a box, basically, because everybody wanted me to keep doing that, you know, and because it was successful. So rather than worry about whether or not I should be in falsetto or real voice, it was do that voice again, you know? And Robin was one of those people that would do that. And he would, and I would want him to sing, you know? And he would say, no, do the falsetto, because that's what makes a hit record, you know? So I had to deal with a lot of that. I didn't always want to do it, but, you know, that's what happened.
It must be kind of freeing in a way to get to do these songs again.
Yeah.
In a totally different way then.
Yeah, of course it is. Yeah. And slightly different arrangements and much more from the heart and much more without experimenting with multi-tracks, you know, which was refreshing for me. Refreshing.
Barry, even though you'd been making music for years before that falsetto happened, for a lot of people, the falsetto is the Bee Gees sound.
Right.
And another sound that's instantly recognizable as the Bee Gees is that iconic intro to the song Stayin' Alive. We're going to just hear a little bit of that. That intro, I mean, that's really the first tape loop on a pop record.
It's on Woman in Love. It's on More Than a Woman, and it's on Staying Alive, and might even be on other tracks, but we use the same drum loop for about three or four records. You know, we just change the speed. But I think it's a two-track tape around a brush and then around the Nampex reel. And you could pretty much dictate what tempo, whether it's faster or slower or whether it works, but it really made for great grooves because you could fill in all those spaces. It's just downbeat and a backbeat, you know?
Yeah. Dave, when you hear a story like that as a producer, you know, what goes through your head? And have there been times where you've had to get creative and solve a problem that way that led to something amazing?
No one's ever going to beat that. I mean, it's just genius because they figured out something that works and then they go, okay, well, that worked. Let's give it a go again. It's not even just about that loop. It's about how they took the same drum beat and phrased the rhythm completely different. If you listen, there's all cymbal swells and congas and all this stuff that all of a sudden you take something that is the same bass ingredient and you've changed it. So there's a lot of genius in the production, aside from just recycling the same loop.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, there are things like a cymbal backwards.
Right.
And like a shh. And it takes you into a downbeat. That's cool. So we will do that. So we just experimented so much.
I'm speaking to Barry Gibb and Dave Cobb about the new album, Greenfields, the Gibb Brothers Songbook, Volume 1. most of the songs on this record are reworkings of Bee Gees songs, but one of the songs on this album has never been released until now, and that's the track Words of a Fool. Barry, you performed that with Jason Isbell. Dave, what do you remember from this session?
Jason Isbell, I've done a few records with him, and he's one of my favorite humans on the planet. And Jason, you know, aside from just being an incredible singer and guitar player, he's one of the most masterful writers with a pen, mm-hmm. I think, that's ever walked the earth. And to see his face respond to the lyrics of this song and respond to the craft of this song, I think is the thing I take away most, because he really got what Barry was going for. He really got the intent and the lyrics. And when Jason's singing on this, you can hear him connecting with the lyrics. And as well as Jason and I are from a similar part of America, with Southeast, and it just, the way he sings this song and the way Barry wrote this song sounds very authentic to the landscape that we grew up in. And so he immediately connected to it, and you know, it's just a magical moment. And to see him sing next to Barry, he said something really funny as we were recording the song. You know, we were talking about, should we do this here in this part? And he goes, hey, I don't know if you noticed, but one of us is Barry Gibb and one of us isn't.
Well, that's really nice. That's really nice. But then, you know, he also said, you know, this guy's an idiot.
he was absolutely really enjoying the moment and enjoying being part of it.
So was I.
Just magic, you know.
I'm going to play Words of a Fool now so we can hear your work with Jason. Here is Words of a Fool. It's Barry Gibb and Jason Isbell.
Nature is cruel, but all hope is gone. You don't act on the words of a fool. Now times may be tough, but we might survive.
Words of a Fool, Barry Gibb and Jason Isbell. That is from Barry Gibb's new album, Greenfields, the Gibb Brothers Songbook, Volume 1. Should we expect more?
Yeah, because I fully intend to do that. But if I can't do it with Dave, then I won't do it at all. So man, that's all there is to it. That's all there is
Dave,
to it.
What do you say?
Yeah, duh. Yeah,
you know,
I mean, yeah.
That's the truth. That's the truth, man.
Barry Gibb and Dave Cobb have been my guests today on the World Cafe. Thank you so much. It was such a pleasure.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank y'all.
Thanks, guys.
All right, love.